Well, thank you very much for being here. It's an honor and a pleasure for me as well as for you to be here. What can I say? If you want to know more about me, there's the website, danzamardin.com. I'm required by the college to put up a caveat. I put up the honest caveat rather than the one they give me about how it's only my opinions. No, it's not. It's the opinions of all sorts of analysts, reality, etc. I neither know nor care whether it's your policy. I want to talk about slightly different take on this. It's how, not what, but how an adversary war games is an intelligence collection requirement. Obviously, some of what is, if you find out your adversary is wargaming, attacking on the left flank, that's an intelligence of intelligence interest. But of strategic and immediate tactical, but a strategic interest is how are they wargaming? How they wargame tells you something about their how they treat wargamers, how they treat wargaming results, going back to the question raised a few minutes ago. How seriously do they take wargamers as well as the wargaming results? Let's see if this works. Yes. So I'm going to use Peter Perler's definition. Nothing more needs to be said about that. Let me just check my notes to make sure that is correct. So during a war game, which is not the same as an exercise and which is not the same as the war that the, even the same players in the game might have to lead, there are different psychological stresses on them, different bureaucratic stresses on them, and their characters surface during the play of that game within the contents of the bureaucracy. All war games support decisions. If they don't, they're not worth doing. Okay, I'm a professional wargamer for, it's now called the Department of War. I'm a professional wargamer for national security purposes. Educational game, what's the decision being supported? Do we or do we not promote that person into a position for which the education was required? A decision always follows a war game up the chain of command. And there are two kinds of, every game contains an inner game, what you think of as the war game. There's a game being played in the outer game, okay? The players of that game are the sponsor's chain of command, the war game designer, the war gamer's designer's chain of command, and every stakeholder with an interest in manipulating the decision that the war game is meant to inform and who has the ability, political power, whatever, to interfere in every aspect of the war game design. And yes, they do. So, we should also be looking at, and I believe it's more important to look at, how the adversary's outer game is played. Focusing on what happens on their inner games tells you a little bit about the interests of their war gamers. It tells you very little about the strategic implications of those decisions in the minds of the their leadership. So, all decisions have time horizons. All decisions should give you benefits. And they also, unfortunately, impose costs on you. Those costs and benefits accrue at different rates. And so looking at how those rates, when does the crossover occur, and looking at the time horizon of the decision makers will tell you something about their attitude towards the decisions, the results that come out of the game. What you're doing is you're wargaming now. You're pulling the future into the present. You're wargaming now something that's going to happen in the future, especially with high operational or strategic gaming. But between now and then, you have an acquisition game going on. You are buying stuff. You are researching stuff. So is your adversary. And both sides are looking at each other and perhaps changing what they buy and how they shift their resources depending on what they see the other person is doing. We ought to be wargaming that, and I know that in some places we are, and we ought to very much be looking at how they are wargaming and gaming out the acquisition game. You go to war with stuff. No matter how brilliant you are as a person, If you've got crossbows and they have Kalashnikovs, you're going to lose. So we want to project, we drag from the future into the present and project into the future. So to phrase the future shades the present, always does. Here the idea is that if it's true that past planning and warfighter performance somehow informs your assessment of their current and future warfighting performance, then perhaps the same is true of wargaming. How they wargame in the past may tell us something about how they're wargaming now, which may in turn tell us something about their the characters of the people who participate in the games. The question is, of course, why should you care about how, you know, who participates in games? Many of you have seen this diagram before, handwritten notes from the German archives of a game in 1927. 17 participants from Lieutenant Colonel up to 06 Captain, ended up in World War II, 6 four-star generals, 10 field marshals, 1 grand admiral. Now, you can't necessarily, but it'd be an interesting exercise, predict the promotability of people by how they behaved in a game, but it would have been really nice to have been able to drag up archives about how these people performed during that interwar period when you're facing them. So who was it that said, I've read your book, One General About Another in North Africa? There you go. Read his book. Be nicer to have seen how he performed. The German army at this time treated wargaming as a sort of spiritual exercise, character development. They very clearly focused on wargaming as an actual, not just a training exercise for the players, but an actual character development, and character is fundamental to leadership. And so they took how their people performed in war games very seriously when it came to promotion. And there's an example, Operation Wacht am Rhein, AKA Battle of the Bulge. The army group commander was actually holding a war game, looking at what we would do if the Americans came in on this particular axis. And in the middle of the game, the Americans did. The war game up at Army headquarters continued and was used to drive and generate orders that flowed down to the divisions. They treated wargaming as just a part of real planning. Neil will talk about this in much more detail. I've got a few quotes here that might be of interest. Basically, norm-based planning and actions dominate war games and operations in the past, very much in the past. Officer participants have been promoted or demoted on the basis of their performance in war games. If the commander does take the initiative, this is key, then he'd better find a theory to back up his actions or he gets the chop. They're talking about slow, detailed adjudication, which is optimal for decision support, but poorly suited to developing thinking skills. And you end up with large-scale battlefield maneuvers, not much initiative at the bottom, a lot of initiative at the top. The question I have is, what the hell's happening now? And you know, what would you do if you were trying to pre the Ukraine invasion? What happened? I don't know. Neil is going to tell us. But it would be nice to know, before that war started, what was going on. Japan's Total War Research Institute, they set that up when they were thinking about war with America. And guess what? Full of war gamers, put there because Japan realized that they were the best people to have there. And the results from the war games weren't good, so were completely ignored at the senior military as well as the political level. I don't know if it ever got from the senior military to the politicians, but they were told to shut up, go away, and color within the box. And that led to tactical blind spots. A junior officer in the Japanese Navy's higher command made the suggestion, what if the Americans had a carrier over here on our flank in this area? And he was told to shut up and color within the box. And it turned out that they did. There was no intelligence that's at the in the Japanese level that said that they would, but they did, and they hadn't actually explored what they'd do if it was, including go out and have a look. So, two types of approach, and you have to ask this about yourselves as well as do your senior officers view war games as sources of insights, or do they view war games as a tool to beat the acquisition process into compliance? Are they torturing the data, or are they actually listening to the war game? I've got a bunch of what I propose are intelligence questions. I've said it's an intelligence collection requirement, and those of you who have been intelligence officers know they're intelligence questions. How seriously does the enemy chain of command take wargaming? And in the PDF that you'll get online, I've got a bunch of bullets on that. For example, how far up the chain of command do wargame results go? Does wargame performance affect promotability? Up or down? Oh, you've been to too many wargames. You're not out there in the fleet or on the ground playing in the mud. You know, you're wasting your time playing these games. How does the enemy chain of command interfere with wargaming? We know ours does. Absolutely. They play the outer game, okay? When huge amounts of money, percentage-wise or total, are at stake, you better believe that they're playing the outer game. If you don't, please give me some of whatever it is you're smoking. It's clearly good stuff. And how fit for purpose is their wargaming? How fit for purpose? Key intelligence questions. Now, how do we look to them? This is where red teaming comes in. Red team, yeah, so suppose a red team, but not quite. Think about how our war games would look to them if they were penetrating us and looking at our games. Of course they're not. We're completely immune to any kind of intelligence surveillance, etc. How would we look to them? Do we believe that they would conclude that our war gaming is fit for purpose? Our senior officers clearly conclude it is, or they conclude it's irrelevant, one of the two. They don't say it's not fit for purpose. Maybe it isn't fit for purpose. In which case, what are we doing about it? And if we're not doing anything about it, why not? What are the barriers? Or more accurately, who are the barriers? And how do we remove them or them? And so we come full circle back to deception. If you're involved in intelligence, you are involved in deception, by definition. If you know you're being watched, it's a channel to deceive. If you're watching them, you have to watch out for them attempting to deceive you. How can we use wargaming, which we have to do, as a means of deception? How can we use it as a means of signaling? We use exercises to signal, not just to exercise. Hard to hide an exercise when the satellite's going overhead and the citizens from your foreign country sitting in the little bakery they've purchased at the end of your training area with their sat phones. Hard to hide exercises. It's easier to hide war games, but you do a lot more war games. You can do a lot of signaling here. You don't actually have to hold the war game to signal the results of war game. You write the wargaming report. Okay? But the wargaming report and your behavior towards that report, which you assume you hope they're watching because you're being a little loose with security, that has to fit the usual way your wargaming reports are treated by your higher chain of command. It has to be something that just slips out. Something that's too obviously, everyone's rah-rah promoting it and saying, yeah, this is wonderful, we ought to pay attention to it, in an environment which no one says that, is a dead giveaway. Okay? What would counter-deception look like? So, how would we go about doing this? Well, we should be starting to break up wargaming by what its purpose is. Okay? Is it planning, future research, exploring concepts? What? What's the environment the wargamers are sitting in? Their culture, their education, institutional environment, command climate, particularly important. And what about support for wargaming? What else? I'm not convinced those headings are necessarily correct, but it's a start. What would you expect to see in those little cells there? Why don't you see them? What are the gaps? What does it tell us? This, once analyzed, I claim, might give us an insight, further insights in how they might lead and fight and in their characters. Action items, it's text heavy, apologies. Well, I'm not really apologizing. I couldn't think of a cunning graphic. Collect on how our enemies war game. How? We already collect on what, but that's sort of a collateral of an intelligence cycle. Look at how we war game through enemy eyes. That tells us something about ourselves and helps us actually improve our own wargaming, and apply the intelligence cycle to enemy wargaming focused on how. And that, they wouldn't let me put my favorite image in here, of Laurence Olivier drilling the teeth out of Dustin Hoffman in that great movie, you know, Questions. So, Neil, you're up. Thank you very much.